From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 16th day of May, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson. She's here in Champaign, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, a member of the House Agriculture Committee is not happy the crop insurance provisions of the new farm bill are linked to conservation compliance. A bipartisan group of senators is asking that the farm bill be brought to the floor of that body, and an Iowa State University study shows the production of ethanol in the United States has reduced the wholesale price of gasoline by more than a dollar a gallon. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories, and then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City as we close out our half hour together on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on a Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. The July soft red winter wheat gained 30 and a quarter cents to settle at $6.38 and three quarters today. September at $6.51 and a quarter, up 29 cents. The hard red in Kansas City up 28 and a half at $6.56 on its settlement price. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, settlement price for the July futures at $6.20, up 22 and three quarters. September at $5.37, up 14. And December corn, $5.26 and a quarter. The harvest month, up 11 and three quarters of a cent. March futures at $5.37 and a quarter, up 10 and three quarters. And the May contract of next year at $5.45, up 10 and a quarter. July up a dime for next year at $5.52 and a quarter. And December futures of 2013 at $5.36, up 9.5 cents. July soybeans up 9 at $14.22. August at $13.95 and a quarter, a penny and a half higher. September at $13.42 and a quarter, up 2 and a quarter. And then the November came down 2 and three quarters, $13.02 and a quarter. January at $13 even, down 2.5 cents. In the March soybeans at $12.72 and three quarters, down a penny and a quarter. Bean meal futures at $4.25, up $7.80. Bean oil at $50.43, $1.04 lower. Live cattle futures finished the August at $118.95, up 22.5 cents. August feeders at $158.32.5, up 65. And July lean hogs at $87.62.5, up 22.5 cents. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, June contract, $92.83 a barrel, $1.15 lower. Ethanol at $2.17, that's up 4 3/10. Natural gas at $2.62 7/10, 12 7/10 of a cent higher. Heating oil in the June contract at $2.89 3/10, 3 9/10 of a cent lower. Gold futures finished at $1,536.20 an ounce, down $20.60, and the dollar now up 0.14 at 81.36. The CRB index at 289.35. The Commodity Research Bureau was up 0.21 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 75 degrees on a northeast wind at 15 miles an hour. It will gust all the way to 23, and then tonight mostly clear, a low of 44 with an east-northeast wind at 5 to 13 miles an hour, gusting to 16. Tomorrow, sunny skies and 78 degrees. The winds will shift to the southeast at 6 to 9, and tomorrow night mostly clear, a low of 54 with a south-southeast wind at 9 miles an hour. On Friday, we should see sunny skies, a high of 84 degrees with a south wind at 8 to 10. Friday night, mostly clear and a low of 63. Saturday, mostly sunny and 85. Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 65 degrees. On Sunday, mostly sunny and 84. Sunday evening, mostly cloudy and 63. Monday, chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny. A high of 80. Monday night, showers and thunderstorms, and a chance will continue. Mostly cloudy and 58 degrees. And Tuesday of next week, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, and a high near 76. A more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Please do visit our website at willag.org. When you do, if you look just under the picture of Dave Dickey and me, you'll find a couple of links to our August bus tour. We're headed to Convent, Louisiana, to New Orleans, and we'll see the export facility there along the way. We'll visit with John Bondurant and Dan Zwicker, stop by the Mound City CGB Enterprise Rail and River Terminal. We'll stop in Tunica at the casinos, the French Quarter as well, and spend a night on Beale Street. Should be a great trip. Check out all the details on our website at willag.org. On this Wednesday afternoon, time to check the futures markets with Jackie Vaik. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie. What a day it was in Chicago.
Good afternoon, Todd. Oh, my goodness. What a wild ride. You know, when you have to really look at wheat first out the gate because, you know, we found out this morning they announced that we were going to have lower wheat production coming out of Russia and they reduced the EU crop. And I'm going to call it the Sokovia effect. The Weather Service came out and announced that these Sokovia winds, which go across Russia every once in a while, will probably show up this weekend, and they're winds that are really low in humidity, high in temperature, and in the past they have just desiccated crops in a very, very short amount of time, and the crops there right now in the Volga River Valley and Kazakhstan are already under a lot of stress, and so the minute that was here, what we saw was wheat just blew through the 10-day moving average, and it hit enough buy stops to take it all the way through the 20, the 40, and the 50-day moving averages before we finished this afternoon. And so it was better than the perfect storm.
Yeah, the perfect storm, did it remind you at all, and we're several months ahead of this, but a few years ago in August when they shut off exports out of Russia?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, and we've known for a long time that they were heavily short wheat, especially funds. And so a lot of today's action came out of short covering. I believe one of the reasons beans couldn't get any traction was because we saw a lot of unwinding of spreads between beans and wheat and beans and corn also. And so that had been a really popular spread for quite a while, buying beans and selling corn and wheat. And I think that beans will begin to pick up once that slows down. But we also saw some interesting things come out this morning from the commercials saying that they think the USDA is just really too low on their 12-13 corn demand, and that's old crop and new crop both, and that they're too low on the 13 bean and meal demand. An unusual statement to see coming out of the commercials, but, you know, but it's there. And old crop corn, for sure, Todd, is showing its strength right now out in the countryside. I heard 17 over at the ethanol plants in Minnesota yesterday, 70 over in parts of Illinois, parts of Indiana, so, you know, It definitely bears out the fact that we're short on the corn side.
Did I see also that there was a confirmed sale of corn to China today?
There was. It came out at USDA announced it as 900,000 metric tons, but 660,000 of that had already been announced to unknown. So it just kind of confirms that China is unknown. But that still gives us an extra 240,000 new crop corn sales. And that included 180,000 of old crop corn sales. So it certainly gave a lot of support to the market. I think if anybody had time to look at the FarmDoc article that Scott Irwin and Daryl Good put out, you know, talking about 161.4 as being probably a more realistic number to be looking at rather than 166, and, you know, saying that there's only a 1 in 3 chance that we should necessarily hit 166. I'm certain there were some traders that were looking at that. And, you know, corn was definitely supported today, too, because the spread, wheat gained 18 and three-quarter cents ahead of corn, which would say to the trade, we'll probably be feeding corn now and less wheat.
Well, it all changes, and it changes fairly fast. So just, a week ago, we were talking about the WASDE numbers, not even quite a week ago, and the bearishness of them. And then then we started to hear rumblings about it being awfully dry in the lower 48, and the government showed us that was the case. And now we've got Russia a bit drier. at this point, and maybe those winds that you talked about early on sweeping across and desiccating that particular crop. So what is a producer to do when they take all of this in? And more importantly at this point, Jackie, do you think that this puts a trading range in place as we make our way through the market?
Are you asking me trading range for right now?
Corn,
yes. For the next month or so?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking me?
Well, yes.
I think that when you look at, from a farmer's perspective, I think it's always wise to have yourself protected. And I know a lot of people who have. I like to see people 100% covered by the time we get to the June time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And that's between cash sales and using options. I'll never sell 100% of the crop in cash. But I think in a circumstance like this, you have to be on top of your game. We're back up at that 626 level in December corn. I think it's very important that you go and you look to see once what the elevators are telling you. Basis will tell you everything about what their attitude is toward new crop. And if you can't get what you want in the cash market, I think you have to get some types of puts in place. I really think you cannot let an opportunity like this go past, because just like you said before, as quickly as it turned around, that's just how quickly it can go the other way.
Right. You said 626, but you meant 526.
526,
for new crop corn.
Right.
What's important about that number?
Well, you know, we hung around that number for quite a while. I think that it's a circumstance where if you look at the bigger picture, we're just below that 50-day moving average. And we're in a situation where, the 20-day moving average. And that's been something since we failed at the 20-day moving average, we just haven't been able to crawl back out above it. So I think that it bears calling into good risk management, and that means that you reward something like this in a move in the market. Even though it's 11¾ cents, we were down to, that magic 4 number the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is quite a nice comeback. I know everybody likes to get bulled up, and I'm not any different in that respect, but we have to manage risk. That's the name of the game.
Anything to discuss in the livestock market for the day?
Well, the livestock market looked really good from the standpoint that we saw a lot of short covering there. The expectation is that cattle on feed is going to show lower placement numbers, and it wouldn't be surprising. And the back-end contract certainly showed a strong movement. Again, backing up that they do say that there's going to be tighter supplies. We saw some really good retail numbers in the cattle, and hogs are trying their darndest to put in that low. they're trying, let's just put it that way. Crude oil has been interesting, too. I think that's something that we kind of gloss over sometimes, but we've seen it go down. It tested the 50-day moving average today, but we'll see what happens tomorrow. Tomorrow they're actually going to reverse the Seaway pipeline, which supplies Cushing, Oklahoma. That's where they deliver the Texas oil that's actually traded on the NYMEX.
Mm-hmm.
The last time they did this, it dropped the spread down to $5, and right now the spread is at $18. So it's kind of interesting. We talk about how quickly things can change. That's another situation that's just laying in the background. There's just so many things going on. And I suppose the final highlight we should talk about, Todd, is extended hours, right?
Right.
You know, you look at extended hours and what a mess that is. Holy smokes. Today the CME came out and said, or there was an announcement made that the CME may only go to a 21-day or a 21-hour day rather than a 22-hour day, that they might close from 2 until 5. They're not confirming anything. And prior to that happening, you had Iowa Senator Grassley asking them to release the USDA reports during the 2 hours they were going to be closed from 4 until 6. And we also had R.J. O'Brien asking them to halt the market from 7:15 to 9:30 on report days. What a mess.
And the CFTC is still trying to make a decision on the 22-hour trading day, I think.
I believe so. I think what it will ultimately happen is if they do decide to go with this 21-hour day, then they'll have to go back to the CFTC and get that okayed. So it's unlikely it would happen on Monday like we've been expecting. But I think the biggest issue is how do we still handle this and be fair to the pits, to the live pits? Because if you're going to reduce or if you're going to put out reports during those hours they're closed from 4 until 6 or from 2 until 5, how does the pit fit into that?
Absolutely. Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Jackie Vikes is with Stuart Peterson. She's in Champaign, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In agricultural news, there is evidence of some pushback in the House Agriculture Committee on adoption of a link between conservation compliance and crop insurance eligibility when the 2012 Farm Bill is written. Committee member Steve King, a Republican from Iowa, says that he opposes linking the two, and King says that he is not aware of any specific measure or amendment to be offered in the committee, which is due to release and vote on a farm bill in June. Lenders have said they worry that farmers will turn away from crop insurance if it requires conservation compliance. Meanwhile, a bipartisan group of 44 senators sent a letter yesterday to Senate leaders calling on them to bring the farm bill to the floor. Senators noted the bill reduces the growth of government spending by $23 billion and passed out of the Senate Agriculture Committee last month on a bipartisan vote of 16-5. Senate Agriculture Committee leaders wanted to see floor action on the farm bill before the Senate breaks for Memorial Day. A new study from Iowa State University says that the production of ethanol in the U.S. reduced wholesale gasoline prices by an average of $1.09 per gallon in 2011. The study found that the main factors that contribute to ethanol's role in reducing gas prices include higher oil and gasoline prices, higher ethanol inclusion, and ethanol being priced at a discount to gasoline. Ethanol's effect on gas prices increased by 20 cents from the 2010 savings of 89 cents per gallon. U.S. ethanol production reached a record high of more than 13 billion gallons in 2011. The average price of a gallon of regular grade gasoline was $3.52 in 2011. Without that production, the study says, gasoline prices would have been closer to $4.60. China's National Grain and Oils Information Center says that China's corn output this year is likely to reach a record 197.5 million metric tons, up 3% from 2011. Corn acreage this year is likely to rise 2.6% to 34.3 million hectares. The country's output of soybeans is estimated at 13 million tons, down 7%. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, and of our bus tour that's scheduled for August 20th to the 24th to see the CGB Enterprise Export Facility in Convent, Louisiana, and we'll stop a couple of other places along the way. It should be a great trip. People are signing up, so if you want to go, now would be the time to go ahead and get yourself registered. You can do that by visiting our website at willag.org. Look for the links under the picture of Dave and me. Now up next, you know, May 11th, USDA's guess that the size of this year's corn crop was really pretty big. Very big, according to most in the trade, and some are wondering why. I'll have more on the calculation from the University of Illinois. USDA has for several years in its May report used a relatively small number of years to calculate trend yield. The USDA trend yield for corn normally includes all years from 1990 forward. It adjusts that trend to include a good or bad start to the growing season. This year, it added 2 bushels for the early planting of the corn crop. Still, this last report was different, says University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good.
The change they made is that they did not use 2011 in calculating the historic trend yield. They stayed with the 1990 through 2010 actual yields and then projected that trend 2 years forward to 2012. And, of course, that eliminated a relatively low-yielding year in 2011. And so the trend calculation is 164. Add two bushels to get to the projected 166. If, on the other hand, you do a 1990 through 2011 trend, you get about 161.4. Add two bushels, you're at 163.4. So you're about 2.5 bushels less than what USDA is using if you include last year in the trend analysis.
Good. A number cruncher thinks the 2011 crop year should have been used to calculate the national trend yield for corn in the United States.
I argue it should have been left in. I mean, it's not unusual when you do trend analysis to say, let's drop out extreme years, particularly if conditions suggest that those kind of extremes are not going to occur this year. So looking back historically, we might drop out years like 1993 when we had historic flooding in the Western Corn Belt that really lowered yields and say, that's really not going to happen this year. We'll not include that in a trend analysis. So we'll drop out that so-called outlier out of the historic data. But 2011 by no means was an outlier year. It was a low-yielding year, but certainly within the realm of possibility and reflected mostly lack of ideal summer weather conditions, which clearly can happen again in any year.
So while it did not happen this way, Darrell Good thinks it would be logical to include 2011 in any analysis of trend yield in the U.S. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. Ben Stoller of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, on the phone line. Ben, tell me about basis in your level or in your area and how it jumped or did not jump today.
Sure, Todd. Basis is certainly firm here on the corn side. Here at Climbers in particular, yesterday we went to a 40 posted. We're seeing a lot of 40s, 45 posted bids here at the processors. And elevators as well are showing some strong basis with some good rail values.
You get a good explanation for why?
Well, I think there's just not a whole lot of movement out there. And so certainly wanting to get the corn moving, and it's taken a strong basis rally. So story today, Todd, is not necessarily the basis side, but more so the future side. As you well know, we had July corn futures up 23, wheat futures up 30, and beans up 9. I think the big story here the past 2 days has been wheat. Wheat's really been the leader. Funds have had a record short wheat position, and so we're seeing that being unwound and carrying the wheat market quite a bit higher. I think that's largely due to some dryness concerns here domestically and over in Europe.
And what are your bids for the day there?
Bids for cash corn in Delphi, 655. Corn to Climbers Ethanol Plant, 660. IBEC, 650. And beans to Delphi, 1404.
Ben, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Ben Stoller is with the Climbers facility that belongs to the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Back in just a couple of minutes when we'll talk with Drew Lerner.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's St. Honorandus Day. He's patron saint of bakers, pastry chefs, and flour merchants. On this day in agricultural history in 1832, Philip Danforth Armour was born. An American industrialist, he was a pioneer in the use of refrigeration and meat canning. Armour & Company helped make Chicago the meatpacking capital of the world. His company was one of the first to employ an assembly line technique. In 1861, John Stevens Henslow died. The British clergyman and botanist was a mentor of Charles Darwin. To get farmers to apply scientific methods, he gave lectures on the fermentation of manure. He also showed Irish farmers how to get starch from rotten potatoes during the potato famine of 1845 and 1846. In 1947, Sir Frederick Gowland Hopkins died. He discovered what we now call vitamins, essential nutrients needed in animal diets to maintain health. Hopkins, who received the Nobel Prize in 1929 for his discovery, was expelled from high school for truancy. He then became an insurance salesman, and he was 28 years old before earning enough money to attend medical school. And in 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Michigan and New York could not prohibit people from buying wine online from out-of-state wineries. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather in Kansas City now joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew, can you tell me a bit about what we can see over the next few days here in the Midwest?
Well, you know, it's not going to be bad at all for getting additional field work accomplished because we don't have much precipitation in the pipeline, and temperatures will be working their way a little bit warmer, and we'll likely see temperatures getting up into the 80s periodically as we go through the day tomorrow, and we'll probably see some more of that occur as we get on into the latter part of the week. Friday and Saturday will probably be warmer than tomorrow will. A lot of our region immediately here will probably be in the 70s yet tomorrow afternoon, but those 80s will be pushing into the western parts of the Corn Belt, and very quickly will advance into the heart of the region on Friday and continue on Saturday, maybe even linger a little bit on Sunday. The only negative thing I can come up with here with those temperatures warming like that is that we will be accelerating the drying rates across the region. And since we don't have a major storm system on the charts right now, that means that these pockets that are already trending too dry are going to continue moving in that direction until a cool front comes across the region, and that is expected to occur Saturday into Sunday. And during that two-day period, we should see showers and thunderstorms across quite a few areas, with the easternmost parts of the Midwest, meaning Ohio, parts of southeastern Indiana and Kentucky, probably seeing with their rain mostly Sunday night and Monday. The precipitation that comes with this event will be very important because we do have some dryness issues out there beginning to evolve. But it looks like the rain totals are probably going to run mostly in the range of a couple tenths to three quarters of an inch. And every bit of that is going to be welcome, but I think we're still looking for a bigger soaking of rain across the region to really make a difference in the long run.
There have been some rumblings in the last week about drier areas in large parts of the United States. I'm not quite sure what to make of those just yet. Can you give me some context in which to put those rumblings?
Yeah, I think that certainly from a percentage of normal perspective, there's definitely a large part of the northwestern plains, even the central plains, that are picking up on minimal amounts of moisture recently. Areas from southeastern Missouri into the lower Ohio River Valley, portions of the northern delta are also very dry, as well as the southeastern states. And there's a few other pockets that I haven't mentioned. But the forecast in the long run here is going to generate an increase in precipitation for the northern plains and parts of Canada's prairies. That's going to be the biggest change as we move forward through this next week to 10 days. So all of those drier areas will be relieved. That leaves us with the lower Ohio River Basin and parts of Missouri and the Delta that may not be in real good shape over this next two-week period. The amount of rain that's being suggested for these areas is really minimal relative to the evaporation rates, with a lot of 80-degree highs expected. So I do think that we'll have to watch all of the lower Midwest probably a little bit closer as we go through this next 10 days to 2 weeks to make sure that we don't get too dry. The pattern should give way to some better rain potentials as we get into the last week of May and to the first week of June, but you know how it goes this time of the year. We'll have to just kind of keep a close eye on the situation.
A very short note, if you could, on China, please.
The North China Plain is still running quite a bit drier than it should be at this time of the year, but they irrigate a tremendous amount of their winter crop there, and some of the summer crop, though, is certainly in need of moisture. It's been about 3 weeks now since a good rain has occurred. They're going to make it through about 2 more weeks without a good amount of rain. So by the time we're done with the month of May, we're going to have some pretty serious dryness in those unirrigated areas, and significant amounts of moisture will have to fall shortly thereafter in order to protect their production potential.
Thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated. I'm Todd Gleason.